It's time now for Bucks Blue with your host, Lower Makefield Chief of Police, Joe Kelly, brought to you by Jammer Doors.
And welcome to Bucks Blue, May 2025, 107.3 FM, 1490 AM, and anywhere in the world via the internet. Stephen, today our guest is Chief Paul Dickinson from the Pennridge Regional Police Department. And before we get into his background, I want to review a little bit about Police Week. We're finishing up Police Week, so it would be remiss of us not to acknowledge that. Police Week acknowledges it was founded by President John F. Kennedy in 1962. He wrote it into law. And it's meant to acknowledge the law enforcement officers who have given their lives in the line of duty to protect society. And each year on Police Memorial Day, May 15th, officers from all over the country trek down to Washington, D.C. And on May 13th, they have what I consider to be one of the best annual events for police officers lost, which is the Candlelight Memorial at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Washington, D.C., where they formally inscribe the names of the officers killed in the line of duty the preceding year, and any of those that they discover through history that were not previously known. And unfortunately, we average 150 police officers or more lost in the line of duty, or one every approximately 49 hours. But yesterday here in Bucks County, we have three annual memorial services. The first one was at 9 a.m. at the Bristol Township Police Department, and that honors the one officer from Bristol Township, which was Sergeant George Stuckey, who was killed in 1972. And then at 10 o'clock, the Bensalem Township Police Department honored their two officers lost, which were Police Officer James Armstrong in 1975 and Police Officer Robert Yezzi, who was killed in the line of duty in 1980. And then Middletown Township Police Department at noon held a memorial at the Middletown Police Headquarters for Detective Christopher Jones, who was lost in the line of duty in 2009. And then last evening at 7 o'clock at St. Andrew's Church in Newtown, police officers and citizens alike gathered for a memorial service, which again is annual. And it streams, and it's still available via stream on St. Andrew's Newtown's website, if anyone wants to view that. And that paid tribute to the 16 law enforcement officers who were lost in Bucks County since 1898. Their families were in attendance, and some of their descendants were in attendance. And we go through the trouble of honoring these officers each year, and it is an honor for us to do this, to pay tribute to the family, to pay tribute to the lives that were given. Because the only way to truly lose somebody is when we stop saying their name. So that's why each and every year the police officers and the organization, both Chief Dickinson and I represent, the Police Chiefs Association of Bucks County, believes this to be important, and we gather once a year to say these names so that these officers and the sacrifices they made are never forgotten. So with that, again, I'm welcoming Chief Paul Dickinson. Chief Dickinson is the chief of the Pennridge Regional Police Department here in Bucks County. He polices both East and West Rock Hill Borough and Sellersville Borough as well. And he's been in that position since 2021. Prior to that, the chief served from 2003 until 2018 in Lehigh County with the South Whitehall Township Police Department, where he served in various capacities to include police officer, corporal, sergeant, and lieutenant. The chief holds an associate's degree from Bucks County Community College. We're very proud of that. A bachelor's degree from South University and his master's degree from DeSales University. The chief's a graduate of Allentown Police Academy and also holds certificates from Penn State in both POSIT and POLEX, which we're going to talk about in a little while. So if you don't know what those acronyms mean, don't worry about it. We're going to go over them. And he's earned his certificate from the Pennsylvania State Police Leadership and Development Program. While serving with the with the South Whitehall Police. The chief served as an accident reconstructionist, a field training officer, and a motor carrier safety officer. So with that long introduction, Chief, welcome to Bucks Blue.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I appreciate it. Just one correction. We no longer provide policing to Sellersville Borough, but, you know, Percussy Borough does that, our neighboring department.
Okay, so. I wasn't aware.
So. Yeah, they had a, you know, they split a couple years back. So
okay.
Yeah, but
so you have both the Rock Hills, then?
Yeah, both the Rock Hills. So about 30 square miles, population's around almost 11,500. You know, five schools, hospital, you know. We're one of those small communities, but with a lot of bigger department concerns. So,
excellent. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Chief, was when and how you knew you wanted to, and I think I know a little bit about this, knowing you, about your family, but when and how you knew that policing was going to be for you?
Tough question. You start throwing me a softball right there. For those who are out there listening, my father was a police officer for a little over 40 years. So kind of was always in the family type of deal. There were periods in my childhood where, like, I wanted to do it. I didn't want to do it. Went through a couple different phases in life, as we all do. And then when I got to that point in high school when it was time to graduate, I was like, nah, you know, he seems to really enjoy this. And I've seen my dad do very well in the profession. And one of the things that always stuck out to me when I talked to him was, you know, when I told him I was going to do this, he goes, well, you're getting a first-class ticket to the greatest show on earth. And there's a lot of truth to that. So, you know, you went through some of the growing pains and growing issues, you know, getting through college and then trying to get hired on a job. It was a lot different back, 24 years ago when 800 people were applying for one job. Now, you know, it's a little, as we all know, the hiring is a little different now. But
you remember those days where we would show up in an exam? I mean, I can't even begin to relay these stories to the younger officers, because you would show up and you knew that the place you were going to only needed three officers, right? And you were one of 800.
Yeah, so 1999, I think it was, Falls Township. It was my first written police test. And I show up at Falls Township and I'm going to get this job. Yeah, it's my job. I show up, 800 people for two positions. And I'm like, yeah, maybe we're going to have to work at this a little bit. And, you know, it's what I try to tell everybody when they're coming through the process, when I have younger kids, potential people who want to be police officers, I always tell them, like, hey, as soon as you're eligible to take those tests, start taking those tests. Even if it's not necessarily somewhere where you want to go for a career, you know, it's a great opportunity for you to get the test, learn the experience, you know, get in the interview process, and because sometimes that's the toughest battle, is just learning how to do that interview and getting used to that format of the testing. And, you know, I think that's pretty sound advice for someone that wants to get in this line.
And I know you refer to them as kids, because we do, right? That generation trying to come on. You ever run into that kid that says to you, Chief, I took three tests or four tests. I'm so frustrated. I'm going to give up.
Yeah. I mean, throughout my career, I've had that. I mean, I probably took 25, 30 tests before I got my shot. And I got my shot at a department that I just applied to on a whim. So that's why I always say to someone, like, you know, you just have to throw your hat in the ring and see where it comes to the top for you. Because, you know, when I applied for South Whitehall in 2001 when I actually applied and got hired to 2003, but, you know, it was in Lehigh County. I grew up in Bucks County. My dad was chief in Bucks County. My dad was an officer in Montgomery County before he became chief in Bucks. So it was like, I want to stay in that area, and I'm like, I'll apply to Lehigh. And I got that opportunity, and the rest was history.
That's what I try to tell the young people as well. Coincidentally, I was in a boating safety class this Sunday, an 8-hour class. That had nothing to do with policing, but it was in the Morris County Police Academy, where New Jersey had most of their entrance tests. And I remember going to that same exact room I was in this weekend, probably every other Saturday for a police test. The chief who administered them, Chief Fury, says to me one day, he goes, you're here again? I said, I'm going to be here every week until I break through and get a job. So if there's a coffee you like or something, me and you are going to be here every Saturday until something happens. But young people can't figure out how that used to be, because they're taking one test and getting on.
Yeah. It's a much different world than it was, you know, 20 years ago. And I don't know if that's good or if it's bad. I mean, I think it's a struggle for us as police administrators and executives to try to get quality candidates. But I think for the most part, we're fortunate, because the people who do want to do this job understand that, you know, they understand that it's a long-term commitment, and it's something that they, I think that the majority of them really want to do. So hopefully we're getting more and more of those candidates that want to make that long-term commitment to their community. So
agreed. So you took South Whitehall. I have this written down, though, how you went to Lehigh County. So I guess you see this posting, and you said it was just on a whim?
Yeah. I mean, I live in Upper Bucks County. I actually grew up in the Penn Ridge area. My father was police chief in Percocet for, 12, 15 years.
I'm glad you didn't say forever, because he might be listening.
Yeah, well, it has not been forever. He went somewhere else and then became forever.
I know.
Yeah, right. It was one of those things. They posted a job. I applied for it, went to the testing process, went through it. I did not make the first round of hiring. And actually, I remember they called me on a I actually had just come home from a trip, and I had a message on my answer machine and asked me to call up to them. And like I said, they hired me, sent me through the Allentown Police Academy, and I think I started working on the street. Actually, I know I started working on the street in South Whitehall on December 23rd, 2003. And, because my first call was a Christmas tree through the front window of a house at a domestic. So I always remember that. And that's why that comment from my father that, it's the greatest show on earth, it literally is. Cause you get
right from the first day.
Right from the first call. Yep. So
why don't we take a break here? When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about those early experiences in South Whitehall.
Insurance can be very confusing and costly. That's why it's very important to choose the right insurance agency. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton is a fourth-generation family-owned insurance agency with over 100 years of experience. They'll find the best policy for maximum protection at the best price. Homeowners, business, life, auto, even flood insurance. Peter Toft at Nottingham Insurance will make getting your policies, including flood insurance, an easy and affordable process. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton. Visit nottinghaminsurance.com or call Peter Toft directly at 215-493-1996, extension 214. That's 215-493-1996. Extension 214. Capital Health's Primary Care Network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capital Health Primary Care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health Primary Care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
We now return to Bucks Blue with Lower Makefield Police Chief Joe Kelly, brought to you by Jammer Doors.
And welcome back. Bucks Blue, May 2025, 1490 AM, 107.3 FM, WBCB. We're in studio with Chief Paul Dickinson of the Penn Ridge Regional Police Department. And before we went to break, we were talking about the chief's experience up in Lehigh County at South Whitehall PD. And from living up there, Paul, I know that one of your major responsibilities in that police department, besides an ungodly amount of highways, right, which we're going to get into later when I talk about accident recon, you had a major amusement park.
Yeah, so Thorny Park and Wild River Kingdom was part of South Whitehall, so you got exposure to a lot of different groups, because people are going there to have a good time, a family environment, and unfortunately sometimes when that family environment's there, sometimes it gets out of control. You have a lot of emotions. Our population in the township would sometimes double on a good summer
weekend. That's kind of where I was going to ask you. As a cop and a supervisor, when in the summer months when that opened up, how did it change your scope?
It changed. I mean, call volume at the park itself was, would make us much busier, obviously.
Okay.
Especially on the weekends. There was an influx of issues at the park. The park had their own armed security.
Okay.
And they did their own kind of proactive enforcement inside the park, that they would handle a lot of the things, but sometimes that would turn into criminal incidents. Had an issue for a couple of years with people trying to sneak into the park. So we did a lot of theft from services charges and things of that nature. But, you know, for the most part, between the calls for service at the park and then the traffic aspect of it, because you have a lot of traffic coming in
right,
78 and coming into that park there, it's, you know, you'd spend a lot of time directing traffic, and then you spend a lot of time inside the inside Dorney Park with Lucy and Charlie as Charlie Brown, so interacting with the guests at the park. So,
are there shifts where they hire South Whitehall cops to be inside?
Yeah. So now, I've been gone from South Whitehall for 4 years. Right towards the end of my career there, they did start hiring. The partnership between the township and Dorney Park was pretty strong, so they started hiring officers to come in and work those details. There was a period of time where the sector car, which is, or the car responsible for that area, would handle most of the calls. That was more towards the beginning of my career, and being the new guy, that's where
I
ended up.
Yeah, I remember being that young guy and having that one sector. You know, yep. Oh, not again.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, that was my sector not majority of the time, but a lot. But but you learned a lot. You know, it was trial by fire when you first get in this line of work. So,
growing up, who were some of your role models? Who were your biggest influences?
Well, I mean, obviously my father, but I'll try to not beat that horse dead. So, in my career professionally, I had some very good FTOs.
Okay.
Two really good FTOs. Learned a lot from them. You know, one of the biggest things I learned from the one FTO is, you know, you're out here to be nosy, and you're out here to find what's going on. And then, you know, I mean, from a personal level, I mean, with my father, it was, you know, he was sometimes the first call because he's been around for years. So I'd call him, get his feeling on things, and then go from there. I had a few really good supervisors as well in South Wales that you could always call and talk to and get feedback from them.
So. Are you still in touch with them?
A few of them. Some of them have moved on and retired. And then, you know how that is. You leave your department and you kind of drift apart a little bit, even though you don't necessarily want to do that. But that happens. Unfortunately, the one FTO has passed away. But, you learn. It's one thing that you really learn in this career is how the job can get done in so many different ways. Police work can get done in so many different ways. And as long as you get to that final resolution, it's really all that matters. So that was one thing I learned real early, young in my career, which I think helped me progress through the ranks.
And I learned a lot from my dad, too. But now I'm seeing it. I've been on both sides, right? My dad was in policing, and now my son's in policing. And like you said, I'm usually his first call. I not only think that makes him a better cop, but I think it makes me a better chief because of the perspective. You know, I'm a little bit more in tune with the younger generation than I would get through those official channels, right?
Yeah, I would have to say that's probably a great analogy. One of the special things about working in the department that I'm in now, a smaller department, we're only 13 officers, is as the chief, I still have that role of, you know, the chief, the sergeant. Sometimes I'm the patrolman, depending on what's going on that day. I mean, I know you're very familiar with that. Depending on how staffing is that day, you know, it's very possible that, you know, you're answering the radio when they call you in my department. But yeah, that definitely keeps you in touch with the day-to-day operations, and I think that it does grow you with your officers or with your, you know, with your subordinates, as we'll say, you know, because they see that you're taking an active role and they understand that you have an understanding of the job as well. So,
and I think the benefit to that, like you said, I just came out of that and it was very comparable to size, but you're getting the opportunity to interact with them on a way that some chiefs cannot, right? Just because of the bureaucracy between you and them. That's not the case in these smaller departments. You can teach, you can have impact, you can lead in a way that makes them better faster.
Yeah, I would have to say that, you know, in a department where I came from, it's a 40-some man police department, similar to where you're at now, obviously.
Yeah, we just reversed.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we kind of just flip the roles here. You didn't have that day-to-day interaction even with the lieutenant at that point. When I became lieutenant up there, like, you didn't have day-to-day interaction with the guys anymore, with the patrol guys on the street. And when I got to South Whitehall, when I got to Pennridge, sorry, I was very fortunate to have some of that. I wasn't that far removed from the road. I was lieutenant for 2 years, so that wasn't. So when I came into Pennridge, I was able to really understand what the job was and focus on trying to make them better cops, and not that they weren't good cops, but just developing their professionalism and their knowledge of the job. So
you've had the opportunity to attend some of the best training that's available in policing, both in terms of certification training and then in terms of leadership training. Could you share with our listeners, the first one I want to get into is certification training, which we alluded to in your opening. Could you share with our listeners the process to become a certified accident investigator? First, the different classes that are involved and what's in those classes, and then maybe we'll talk a little bit about how that's used operationally in a police department that has many highways.
I came into South Whitehall at a time when the accident reconstruction guy was on his way out.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, we need someone to take this over, and I had like 2 or 3 years on, so I took the opportunity. So you start out on a basic, very basic level class, small, more not so complex mathematics type things.
Okay.
Collection of evidence on the roadway, evidence in the cars, So that's your basic level. I think they call it like an on-scene homicide investigation vehicle class. And then you get onto more of a technical, advanced analysis of it. So you're doing more complicated mathematics and things of that nature. And then the final class is the accident reconstruction. So that's the whole kit and caboodle. You're doing math equations that are a page long and really have to have an understanding as to how that math works and how to take that evidence that you're collecting on the road and plug that into your investigation. There's an opportunity to become what's called like an ACTAR certified accident reconstructionist, who's like, they're certified nationally and that's a very difficult process. I never actually got to that point in my career. I was able to do a lot of other specialty classes along the way, like kinematics, occupant and kinematics and things of that nature. But accident reconstruction is one of those things that it's very involved, but it's very basic. So I kind of always try to explain it to people when they ask me about it. Like, it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. Like, you have to have all the pieces of that puzzle. And when you're doing that accident reconstruction, you're only taking certain, you don't always have all those pieces of that puzzle. So you have to try to get those pieces that can really determine what ended up occurring in the crash. In a place like South Whitehall, we were doing, probably 4 or 5 fatals a year, which is, not a real high number, but it was a good number for us. And then I had the opportunity that Lehigh County developed a crash reconstruction team.
Okay.
So I was able to I was the co-commander or the assistant commander of that team. Myself and a neighboring lieutenant developed all the policies and the procedures for the team. So we started then responding to pretty much all the crashes in Lehigh County that weren't covered by either the city of Allentown or the state police. So got more exposure that way as well. So it's kind of something similar to do here in Bucks.
I imagine you have to be really up on things, because in the last 10 to 15 years, you've had a lot of changes in technology with cars, with anti-lock brakes, with lane maintenance, with different safety features, as well as the black box, right? People don't realize it's in the car. So
yeah.
I imagine, as an accident reconstructionist, you have to stay up on these things.
So I would say that since I've been out of it for about 4 or 5 years now, I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable doing reconstruction all by myself.
Because it's that fast, right?
It changes that quickly. You really need to stay on top of the technology and the causes of the technology that are in these cars and how it operates. And it's a quickly evolving thing. The more technology that, we have cars that drive themselves now. So, and how do you do a crash reconstruction into those type of things? And we're going to have to prepare ourselves for those kind of things.
Because some of these things are going to take away from the things that you rely on, like skid marks and scuff marks and things like that as well.
Some of that's already there. You have anti-lock brake systems. Obviously, they still leave marks on the roadway, but that evidence can disappear or not be as distinct as it was before, like back, 10, 15 years ago. So
you also serve as a motor vehicle carrier safety officer. Tell me about that job.
So that was an inspection of commercial vehicles. So it was one of the things that sparked my interest with the crash investigation. We had a couple investigators on our department that did that, and the opportunity came up. They needed someone new to go to the school, so I went to the school. School was 6 weeks long. 3 2-week blocks. You're certified federally as a federal motor carrier inspector. And then you have requirements to do motor carrier inspections of the vehicles. So, you know, you're laying underneath trucks and marking brakes and measuring the brakes to make sure the brakes are at the proper proper measurements so that they operate the way they're supposed to operate. You're doing safety checks on tires, wheels, getting dirty, laying underneath trucks at, you know, when it's 100 degrees outside and then when it's, you know, 20 degrees outside. It was something I did part-time. It was not a full-time role for me in South Whitehall. I was very fortunate, though, because I had leadership in that department, both when I was a sergeant and a lieutenant, that allowed me to still continue doing it. So I stay within the, you know, within the requirements of doing it, of doing that specialty. So, I mean, yeah, it was a different thing. It was almost learning, like, a whole nother set of rules and set of laws, and, you know, I'd almost attribute it as, like, you almost have to learn a whole new vehicle code because everything's on those big trucks is different, and the federal rules are much different than the state rules, and you had to have a really good grasp on everything. It's one of those specialties that if you don't continue to do it, you're not going to be proficient at it. So
I would imagine what Route 22 going through South Whitehall, that was
Between 22, traffic. 309, and 78.
309.
We had a lot of trucks, and then the neighboring jurisdictions had, you know, a lot of highways as well. And we all worked, you know, there was a group of us that worked in unison to go out and do these things and work together. So then that was nice, too, because if you found something on a truck that you weren't familiar with, you could always make a phone call, take a picture of it, and send it to the guy and be like, hey, you ever see this? And sometimes sometimes none of you saw it. And it's like, okay, well, I wonder what this is all about. But, yeah, it was a unique... one of the things I experienced in my career was, like, I got to levels where I needed to challenge myself. I'd do the patrol and felt comfortable, and then took on the accident stuff and then felt comfortable with that, and then got on to the next level where it's, this motor carrier thing is next. Take this on as well, and then at the same time going through the ranks. So,
right.
Yeah.
Why don't we take another break here, Stephen, and when we come back, we'll start talking a little bit about the leadership training.
Insurance can be very confusing and costly. That's why it's very important to choose the right insurance agency. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton is a fourth-generation family-owned insurance agency with over 100 years of experience. They'll find the best policy for maximum protection at the best price. Homeowners, business, life, auto, even flood insurance. Peter Toft at Nottingham Insurance will make getting your policies, including flood insurance, an easy and affordable process. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton. Visit nottinghaminsurance.com or call Peter Toft directly at 215-493-1996, extension 214. That's 215-493-1996. Extension 214. Capital Health's primary care network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capital Health primary care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health primary care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
WBCV is now on your FM dial at 107.3, serving Bucks, Burlington, and Mercer counties since 1957. You can now listen to all your WBCV favorites crystal clear on 107.3 FM, a new age for WBCV on a new frequency, 107.3.
We now return to Bucks Blue with Lower Makefield Police Chief Joe Kelly, brought to you by Jammer Doors.
And welcome back to Bucks Blue, 1490 AM, 107.3 FM on WBCB. Before we went to break, we were speaking a little bit, Chief, about your experience, and I think you made a really good point. I wanted to go to commercial and then come back to that good point, which is you always sought the opportunity to learn new material. So... we talked about just two of the roles you held in the South Whitehall Police Department. You've held more. How do those different little experiences, you had a little bit of time doing this, a little bit of time doing that, how does that make you a better chief?
Perspective. I think police work in general is about perspective and learning different people's perspective on what they're going through in their lives. So one of the interesting things that I'll say from the truck enforcement's perspective is you're stopping large corporations,
mm-hmm.
you're stopping mom and pop corporations, you're stopping the one single driver by himself who this, you know, he's struggling every day to make this work,
and
you're understanding that, you know, they're just, some of them are just trying to get by, trying to make a living, and but they still have to stay safe, and you still have to keep everybody else safe. That's the main role of it. Even in the crash reconstruction, when you're doing these reconstructions and you're learning about, you know, the people involved in the crashes, you know, you're getting perspectives as to what happened and how it happened and maybe why it happened. and police work in general, I feel, is that way. Like, you're dealing with people and you're trying to understand why they're having a rough day that day and how you can better serve them. So as a chief, I can tell you that from coming from the larger department to the smaller department, that was my hardest adjustment, was the understanding the different perspective of that community. I came from a much larger organization with a lot more resources to it,
mm-hmm.
To a department that, you know, had a lot of strong officers who just needed a little bit of guidance and a little bit of different perspective. Really, is what it was. And at the end of the day, when I learned that as time went on, but I think that that's the biggest thing as a chief that I learned was you know, you have to understand the perspective not only of your people but of the community that you're serving. You know, that's what's going to make you successful.
Very well said. I alluded to before we were going to explain some of these acronyms that we throw around in police work, right? But people who are listening today would have no idea what we're talking about. First is POSIT. And then the second one is POLEX. They're loose brothers, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell me a little bit about each one.
Oh, well, it's been many years since I took POSIT and POLEX.
I don't need the curriculum, yeah. Just a 10,000 foot view.
I can't even tell you what the acronym means, Joe, honestly. So POSIT, I would say, is more your basic, how do you supervise the individual officers.
Okay.
And then POLEX, I would say, is more of your executive level supervision, like how you're going to run the department.
Right.
I think that's, if you're going to take it at a 30,000 foot view, that's probably it right there.
And then the State Police Leadership Development Program.
So that was a very interesting class. That was 3 weeks out at Pennsylvania State Police Academy, and it was focused on the different behaviors of humans,
mm-hmm.
and how you can lead those different types of people, different aspects of people, really. And they put you in real life situations where you had to kind of role play and work your way through it, and then they showed you real life experiences, either in movies or in stories or body camera type situations, where like these type of things worked and where they didn't work and why they were important. That was a very interesting class because it took everything to like almost to like the educational level.
Okay,
and then you had to kind of apply it. And a lot of it, as you went through the class, at first it was like, oh, this is just, you know, some busy work. And you
mm-hmm.
know. But as you went through the class and you got to, like, the last week of the 3-week class, you really got an understanding as to how you could use certain things with certain officers. And they showed you how to identify weaknesses and strengths and made you look at yourself, too. I mean, that's another thing as a chief. You really have to sometimes take a second and look back at yourself and be like, maybe I didn't handle that the best that I could have. Or, this is how we might be more successful with this officer than with that officer, because you're learning from all these trainings that you go to.
I think that's the most important trait in our jobs, is the ability to look at ourselves.
It's also the most difficult one.
It is, but too frequently I see chiefs who have leaders in all lines of work, but especially ours, chiefs that it could have done better if they would have done a little self-inspection.
Yeah, so I had the chief that was in South Whitehall right before I left, he told me when he got there, he goes, the hardest thing in this line of work is to take a second and look in the mirror. And as much at the time, I'm like, what is this guy talking about? You know, but as he was with the department later and he saw things in me and promoted me to the rank of lieutenant, I started understanding what he was trying to say. And there are a lot of times when I have to step back and take a look in that mirror and be like, well, maybe this isn't the best way to do it. And I think that's one of the good things about being a chief is you do have that time, unlike when you're a street supervisor, mm-hmm. where you have to make rush decisions on the street. And I think that the chief, being the chief, being able to sit back and look at those situations and learn from them is important.
And I think the credibility factor, especially when you're dealing with the smaller agency, with your troops, when you tell them, look, I botched this one, right? But I realized that, and we're going to go in a different direction. I think the credibility factor is also a byproduct of your self-improvement.
Yeah, I mean, everything comes back to your credibility. And if you're not willing to, as they say, fall on that sword,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're going to fall on the sword, sometimes you're wrong, and you're going to make mistakes. And I know for a fact, as the chief, I've made mistakes, and I've told them, like, hey, I really messed this one up.
Yeah.
I did this one good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hey, if I don't need any help, but I took care of it on my own for us. So, if you have to understand that, and you have to be able to say, like, I'm not perfect and I made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Move on from it.
Continuing with the restraints on us, we have a finite amount of training money. We all do. It doesn't matter which agency you're in. And we have a very small window of training hours. How do you go about internally deciding what the focus or refocus, when you're first there, you're refocusing, right? And then when you're there a while, you're focusing where you should spend those dollars and hours?
I think that's something that comes from the being able to figure out where you're going to spend that money really comes from, or that time. I mean, really, time is what it boils down to.
Right?
Exactly. You need to look at the individual officer and you need to see what their strengths are. And maybe sometimes where they're being successful at.
Mm-hmm.
And then also maybe where they're being weak, where they have a weakness at. That's why the relationship between myself and the officers is important, because I can see that interaction. Maybe this one officer needs to go to de-escalation training, or maybe they need to go to, search warrant writing school or something, or those type of schools. I think you have to get to know your people and understand the strengths of your people. And in a larger department, and I know I can attest to this from my previous experience, was like, you need to understand your sergeants, and you need to understand that level, and you need them to understand that they're your eyes and your, mm-hmm. your ears, and if they see a weakness, you need to communicate. I think a lot of it boils down to communication and observation.
Excellent point. You've had a vast amount of experience, not only in your policing jobs, but outside of your policing jobs, in screening and selecting police supervisors and police executives. What are the most important character traits, experiences, or abilities you look for at all three levels? Let's talk about police supervisors first.
I think that when you're going to go through the role of promoting a sergeant or a corporal, you're first level supervision, I think you need someone who's dedicated to the organization, and not only dedicated to the organization, but dedicated to their people.
That's a good point.
Because you're that first level, you're the most. I honestly believe that the sergeant, short of the FTO, is the most important role in the department. So you're looking for someone who's self dedicated, is willing to dedicate themselves to the organization, to training and experience, and also are willing to take a mentorship role to the people who they're going to be supervising. And loyalty is always very important. So,
well said. So you also serve as a lieutenant or a mid-manager. What are the most important traits there?
I feel like to have a solid lieutenant, you really have to see that they have an understanding of not only the role underneath them, but the role above them. I think the role below you is very easy when you make lieutenant,
mm-hmm.
and it's the role above you.
Because you have a ton of comfort there,
right? Because you have comfort there. You've done it. You understand it. You became lieutenant most likely or hopefully because you did a good job as the sergeant.
Right.
In most roles. And then you make this mid-level management where now you're right in the middle, and you need to understand not only what happens below you affects the effectiveness of the department, and what happens above you affects everything. So I think that the most important traits for a guy in the middle is to be able to recognize those different perspectives of the guys on the ground and then the guys in the tower, I would say.
I think you kind of addressed what makes that job so tough.
Yes. That was, I would say, out of all the jobs I've done, well, chief's very difficult, obviously, for obvious reasons, which I'm sure we're going to go into a little bit.
We're going to go into that.
Yeah. But the lieutenant's role is very difficult because you're stuck in the middle. I mean, and you want to be loyal to the people below you, but you also have a higher not a higher calling, but almost like a higher responsibility to the organization, to make sure the organization is successful. And that was a difficult that was a difficult transition for probably the first year and a half before I really got it under control, and then I moved on to becoming chief. So,
so outside of you being a chief, you help select chiefs, and that's a huge, huge responsibility, right? Because if you make a mistake, it bears on your reputation as well as the municipalities. What are we looking for there?
Wow. So I really can't say too much now.
And I know a little bit about your process,
obviously.
I went through your father's.
So I do some consulting work with my father, and they have a very good track record, 25 years of doing.
I think they found some good ones.
Promotions, some chiefs. Yeah, they've made some really good. Yeah, well, one in particular. I mean, he's really moved on to good things too. So but they've done a. My father and his partner have done a really good job in developing a process, and being able to recognize those traits that are important to the leadership role of becoming a chief. And I mean, I'm very in my infancy of doing that. I've only been involved in a few processes, and I think what we do see is that each individual community usually need something different.
That's a good point.
And I think that's one of the places where their business is successful.
Spend a lot of time there, right?
Lot of time dealing with the elected officials and with the borough and township managers and understanding what, you know, why are we going for this process and what are you looking for out of the process, and then when they're doing the evaluation process of it, you know, They look for those strengths and they look for those characteristics, and then the interview process is not an easy day.
No, it's not.
We tell everybody it's not an easy day.
You can't hide. Like you have to be legit, or that process will figure it out.
Yeah,
because it's so multifaceted, right?
Yeah.
You can't.
It's, you know, for most of the chiefs processes that I've been involved in with the business, it's a three stage. It's a three-stage process. One of it's your traditional interview, and then a problem resolution type situation, and then an inbox. And the inbox, you know, from what I understand, can be very, very testing on your.
I think that's probably those should be expanded in use inside departments for other appointments as well.
Yeah.
They really test your ability to be reasonable, to. Prioritize, which is huge, right?
Yeah.
And then your political savvy of how to deal with certain things.
Yeah. The chief searches, my father and his partner have been very successful in hiring some really good chiefs and doing some really good. I mean, for 25 years, they've been running that operation. And
that's the one way you know, right? If you're not good at it, nobody else is going to refer you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think that's a very good point.
Let's take our last break here, Steve. When we come back, we'll talk to the chief on a few other related issues.
Capital Health's primary care network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capital Health primary care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health primary care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
WBCV is now on your FM dial at 107.3, serving Bucks, Burlington, and Mercer counties since 1957. You can now listen to all your WBCV favorites crystal clear on 107.3 FM, a new age for WBCV on a new frequency, 107.3.
Insurance can be very confusing and costly. That's why it's very important to choose the right insurance agency. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton is a fourth-generation family-owned insurance agency with over 100 years of experience. They'll find the best policy for maximum protection at the best price. Homeowners, business, life, auto, even flood insurance. Peter Toft at Nottingham Insurance will make getting your policies, including flood insurance, an easy and affordable process. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton. Visit nottinghaminsurance.com or call Peter Toft directly at 215-493-1996, extension 214. That's 215-493-1996. Extension 214.
now return to Bucks Blue with Lower Makefield Police Chief Joe Kelly, brought to you by Jammer Doors.
And welcome back to Bucks Blue, WBCB, 1490 AM, 107.3 FM. And we're in studio with Chief Paul Dickinson of the Pennridge Regional PD. And before we went to break, we were talking about some of the traits required for different positions in the police department. Now I'm going to shift gears a little bit. You came, grew up in Bucks County, in this arena at least. You go up to Lehigh County, you see how they do it, and then you come back to Bucks County. Have you noticed any palatable differences between law enforcement in Lehigh County and law enforcement in Bucks County? And if so, what are they?
I would say that obviously there's difference between counties. I mean, you're dealing with different district attorney's offices, mm-hmm. and different court system, resources that you have. One thing I'll say about Bucks County compared to Lehigh County is the Chiefs Association is very strong. They have some really great programs that they've put together. For an example, like the Bodie DNA process. I mean, I think that's a fantastic project that they have. Co-responders things are pretty cool that they had down here. And
do you have one of those yet?
We do. Yeah, okay. We've had one for about a year and a half.
All right.
So
excellent.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been really resourceful to everybody that's involved.
Ours has been unbelievable as well. I wanted to spin off a little bit. I didn't want to cut you off, but police chiefs associations, why are they so important?
I think for myself coming from a county into this county, from a different county, mm-hmm. I mean, you have a resource. You have everybody's contact information. You get together every month. You sit down. You you have lunch. You listen to speakers and you kind of get to know each other. And then so when something bad happens, you know that face already. You can make that phone call. Hey, Joe, can you send me a canine officer? I need a canine officer for a school search or something of that nature. You already have those names in your Rolodex that you can call. And then, there's unfortunately in policing and especially as a chief, like there's a lot of things that pop up that you may not know the answer to. And it's great to have those resources to call someone and be like, hey, I need help with this point or I need help with that point or this incident just occurred or have you ever dealt with this before? And you always have someone to call to understand. For a great example for me was when I came to Bucks County, like I had no idea how on-call court worked.
You could imagine how I felt.
Yeah,
at least
yeah.
You had Pennsylvania right. Background, right?
Right. So you come to Bucks County, they have this on-call court system, and it's very different from what I'm used to. And so I had to call. I got to know a neighboring chief, and I had to call him and be like, hey, look, why does it work this way? And they explained it to me, and I luckily they've made some changes to it because it was difficult at first for a small department to have some of those constraints on you, but. It's really about building those partnerships and there's relationships.
And we're seeing that now, right? Like when challenges present themselves, getting people into the jail now and when COVID hit, when we were all dealing with what happened if one of our departments all took ill at one time, these right. are the types of things we can resolve at that county level.
Yeah, it's and I think that one of the strengths that I see in the Chiefs Association moving forward is you see more of that partnership now.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's more of an understanding that we're all in this together than more of, well, that's up in the upper part of the county or that's in the lower part of the county. That's my problem. I think we're all kind of starting to, I think it was always there, but I think it's grown a little bit. So
this next one shouldn't be too tough either because you've been there a few years now. But tell me about the benefits and challenges, if there are any, with leading a regional police department.
So... Regional policing, I think, in the onset of it or when it started was when a community, I'll say it as a, when a community decides they want to do regional policing, the benefits are there. They're seeing an opportunity to provide policing to their community, and in most situations, it's at a lower cost.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest benefits of regional policing is it's you get more resources, you get a bigger pot of money for the communities that are involved. And overall it provides what you're looking for, a safe community for your citizens. And initially it is a cost saving, endeavor. I think one of the problems that does come from regional policing is that some of the communities or some of the, those parties who are involved in that, expect it to always stay as a cost saving. Unfortunately, regional policing is, or policing in general, is expensive. You know, you're not getting much in return for it, and you have to you have to keep on feeding that kitty so that you can keep the organization running. So I think that there's a lot of benefits to regional policing. You get a lot more better services for your community. You get better resources for your police officers. I think it's the chief's responsibility to the regional police board or whatever
parenting group
they have to really convey those needs to them and also to compare them. I mean, in my situation, they still are saving money compared to the organizations the municipalities around them. I mean, they are saving money. They probably would not be able to have their own police departments, and the community wants a police department. So there's a lot of benefits to it, and there can be negatives to it, but I think as the chief and as the township managers, particularly in my situation, who have been wonderful for me, it's our job to convey to the elected officials that these are the things that we need, and this is why the police department needs this, and you know, it can be difficult, but I think you have those difficulties no matter if it's a regional police department or a municipal police department, you know.
Which leads me to another question. We've seen an unbelievable advancement in law enforcement technology. It means it's getting tougher to be a conventional criminal. Things like license plate readers, drones, computers, other types of software, body-worn cameras. But to your point, Chief, these things cost a fortune, right? So what would you say to the critic that says we don't need them?
Well, I can tell you that from the license plate reader side of it, I was able to secure some grant funding to secure license plate readers on all the major intersections in our jurisdiction. And it has been a benefit not only to our department, but the departments around us. It collects information all the time. It's not really so much an enforcement tool. It's more of a data collection tool. We've solved some crimes that we would have never solved before without that information, without that collection of data, license plates.
It runs. The crimes you can solve can be the most serious, right?
It can be the most serious. It can be a homicide or a serious burglary one day, and the next day it can be a minor hit and run crash. And the thing with the minor hit and run crash is that one interaction that victim of that hit and run crash is having, that you're able to solve that crime for them. That leaves a lasting impression with them, with your organization. Of, hey, look, this group of guys or this group of men and women really have a slick operation together here, and they're doing good things. So,
I gave you the easiest part of that question early. I'm going to give you the harder part.
Yeah.
How do you prevent police officers from becoming over reliant on the use of technology? And I'll give you, for instance, I knew a detective about 25 years ago. If he went to a job and there was no DNA and no fingerprint, it was basically closed.
Right.
How do we make sure that they still know how to do it the old-fashioned way?
That's our job as supervisors, and that's our job as leaders, is to take the time to involve ourselves and understand what those cases are and remind them, hey, you need to keep on pushing this one a little bit. Maybe, you know, and sometimes it's as simple as, hey, you need to go do A, B, C, and D. I mean, I've had to do that a few times too. Hey, you know, go do A, B, C, and D for me. You know, hey, it might be a dead end, but at least we did it. And I've been very fortunate with the detective that I have now, and then I have a very good patrol officer who does very good investigative work. They don't have a hard time when I say, hey, go do those tasks, and they do them. And then we've had one in particular, one very large theft that we closed out based on just grinding. We just grinded and grinded and grinded, and we ended up making an arrest out of it. So
I think there's an overlap in supervision and leadership, but I believe they're also independent. So at times, if you could go back in time and see Sergeant Paul Dickinson at the South Whitehall Police in his first month in that role, what advice would you give that sergeant?
Slow your roll. I think, unfortunately, when I, it's myself in particular, if some of my family's listening to this, they'll agree with me. Like, I learned very difficult that, you know, you need to take a second and really look in the mirror. You need to take a second, step back, and realize that, you know, number one, you're not the only one that knows how to do it. Number two, you're not the one that knows everything. And number three, you know, you have to listen to those people who you're supervising, who work for you, so that you can understand maybe why they did what they did. I was a little hot-headed for a while there, and sometimes
I
still
can
be.
Yes.
Well, everybody says that. They always say that. You know, I was a little hot-headed there for many years, and I learned the hard way. I really did learn the hard way that you can't be that way with people. You have to really try to learn from your people, and you know that's a struggle for me every day. There's a lot of people that have worked for me and do work for me, and they will tell you that you know, sometimes you just have to walk away from them. But I always try to fix it. You know, if I do the wrong thing, I try to fix it. So.
Well, again, it's that self-awareness, I think, that makes you the leader you are. With that, Chief, I'd like to thank you for coming on. I think this has been an incredibly informative hour. I think our listeners will benefit greatly from your experiences. And that concludes Bucks Blue for May 2025. Stay tuned for your next program.